From Knockadoom to Ardmore, so much to do and see. Last week, listeners, if you remember, we were talking all about Mount Melry. We were up around the Mount Melry with Mike Brooks, our resident historian. Mike, you're very welcome back again to the programme.
Thanks again, Noel, and good morning again, everybody.
Yeah, Mike, great to have you back. And indeed, last week you were telling us all about the... we ended up talking about Mount Melry and indeed
Capoquin
and Mount Melry and indeed Mitchelstown Castle as well.
That's right, yeah. Beautiful. The whole Capoquin area is beautiful as
beautiful.
Well. And again, as we keep saying, this is just hopefully if you ever go up there. And again, I keep saying it, it's always on the podcast, so you know, you could throw it on before you go up or something like that, or be playing this and
exactly.
As you go up along the river.
Yeah.
You know, you can get a bit more information from it as well, anyway, from the podcast as well, anyway. But yeah, we were in Capoquin and we went up to Mount Melry to a quick visit.
Mm.
We had to take horse and cart up to Mount Melry, but we're back in the boat in Capoquin at the docks there, and we went underneath the bridge and leave now. And as we were kind of on the river, we're heading towards Lismore.
Yes.
So all the ways up, we were saying from the last time, we were heading north.
Mm.
Now we're heading west because it's a 90 degree angle in the river there.
That's right, there's a bend in the river there.
A bend in the river in Capoquin.
Mm.
So we're just kind of heading up. We were after going underneath the bridge and carrying on a small bit there. There is actually a road, we'll say, that runs Capoquin to Lismore Road, and it runs very, very close to the river at most stages as well, anyway. But one place where it actually touches the river, it's called the Kitchen Hole.
The Kitchen Hole.
The Kitchen Hole.
Right.
A great fishing spot as well, though.
Oh, yes.
Salmon.
Absolutely. Yes.
A very, very deep. But it was called the Kitchen Hole, because it was, up above it is Salter Bridge House. We mentioned Salter
Bridge House,
as well, because there was iron ore pits still there. And so Salter Bridge House, the servants used to come down, collect the water and bring it back up to the kitchen. So that was the Kitchen Hole. That's why it was called the Kitchen Hole.
Ah, yes.
So again, Salter Bridge House, guys, I checked it out. There's some limited openings because we passed it last year. And they have different open days.
Seasonal, I suppose.
And most of these places, not the actual house itself, but it's the gardens.
It's the gardens,
You can see the gardens. But just past the Kitchen Hole, we're motoring nicely up the river. We're just past the Kitchen Hole. It's what's called the One Lock Lismore Canal. Lismore Canal. So there's one lock in it.
Just one lock,
At the river, we'll say, where it meets the black water.
Yes.
There's a lock there as well. And I'll go back to Niall O'Brien's Blackwater and Bride book as well.
Mm.
And I'll kind of state what he says. He says there's it's about a mile and a half canal. It was built by Henry Bowman, who was the agent for the Duke of Devonshire at the time. He expected it to carry coal and timber to Lismore and then agricultural produce out.
Right.
So it was built in 1796, mainly for 20-ton lighters. That's what they call it. It was 20-ton lighters. So smaller boats.
Smaller boats,
Kathleen the Main.
No, definitely not.
And really what they were saying was that the length could be kind of no more than of the boat of 48 feet because the lock itself, because, you know, you have two gates.
Yes.
And basically the lock fills up and it lifts the boat and then it carries on into the canal then as well. And so, and then it had to go under two bridges, and these were kind of smaller bridges as well. So you could tell that the lighters were fairly small as well. Mm. And what it said was, just to give you kind of an idea of, you know, what went through this canal. Because, so go back to Killahalla. A lot of the boats, big boats, would stop at Killahalla, and then it was really lighters from there, from that point onwards as well. But it said in 1865, it shows that 565 lighters, now this is just in 1865, right, carried just over 10,000 tons.
My goodness. So it was a busy little place in
1865. And but it's a funny one, is because I didn't realise this actually was, because, you know, it's part of the black water and all that. But the canal bit, and I'll come on to this again, the canal bit is fed by the Ownershed River, not the black water.
So the Ownershed must have been higher.
No, it was they're coming down side by side, kind of and I can get onto it as well anyway, because what it was I don't know if does anybody know that there's the Lismore Boardwalk,
right?
And you know, if you park, the easy way to do it is go come into Lismore from the tower, the old side, tallow side, and go down through the village and then head down over the bridge, we'll say past the castle,
right,
over the two bridges, because there's two bridges there. One is actually, you wouldn't think it because it looks like one bridge, one long bridge, but actually one bridge goes over the Blackwater and the other bridge goes over the Ownershed river there at that stage.
Yeah.
And there's a garage down there as well, you know, the garage that's on the corner. So the first exit to the right is to take to Ballyduff, for my second one, then will take you over the V into Tremor, into Tipperary.
Tipperary.
But if you park kind of near the where the I always park across the road actually, where at the stores of the Lismore Canal.
Yes.
But if there's a little park there as well, go into the park, it's lovely, and they have a boardwalk.
Lovely.
And if you go up the boardwalk, you can actually see there's a little dam.
Yeah.
And you can see the water coming underneath, and that's the actual water that's feeding the canal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's still, you can see it all still there. Yeah. You can follow the channels and all that kind of stuff as well.
Amazing.
So definitely do the Lismore boardwalk.
If you're up there at all, do
and,
that.
And
yeah.
there's a few different things, like there's a few walks down the river as well. I think there's a thing called St. Eklund's Way as well down there. Just amazing. You know,
we were just talking about St. Eklund in the previous programme there about being, so like this part of St. Eklund's Way,
Absolutely. Mm. But so the canal was kind of there, but obviously it's you can still see the canal if you go across the road from where the garage is. Again, it's a little stream, you know, it looks like a little stream, but it's the Lismore Canal, and all the buildings that are there across the road from were part of the canal. They were like the Bride Valley stores in Tallaght.
Yes, they were stores.
And people brought their grains and they brought whatever's to there.
Yes.
And waiting for the boats to head down to Youghal. And that's what the, we just said it there, the road over the V, we'll say what's called the V Road over to, into Tipperary. They call that a Youghal Road because it was bringing the goods from Youghal into Tipperary.
But
so Tipperary.
It just goes to show the importance of Youghal
time. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because like it was the gateway. Basically, it was the gateway to, we said, the south of Ireland.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jeez, no, it was just... but as we're here, we say, as we know, you know, going back into the... We're talking about the old... our Viking friends and all that, raiding the abbeys and all that at Darinus and different places, Malana.
Yes.
But we had Lismore Abbey as well, Noel. And that was founded around the 7th century again. They're all around the 7th century.
Yes.
So by St. Carthage. St. Carthage. He died actually in 637, very precise. And what it was the town was renowned for its early religious history and scholarship, and people travelled from all over Europe to be taught here. So it was a big place, like for even for the French and all this, they all kind of came over here. Plundered a few times by our good friends.
The Norsemen, of course, they couldn't leave anything of them.
Jeez, they put it out in front of it shines, they'll take it.
Yeah, exactly, of course.
But Lismore Abbey, it's kind of not there. I always thought Lismore Abbey and Lismore Cathedral was the same thing, but it's not. What it says here was Lismore Castle, where it sits today, is on top of the old abbey.
Oh, is it?
And
what
it said was Lismore Castle, situated on the site of the old monastery since medieval times. Mm. It was originally built by Prince John, who later became King John, as we know it, and in the 12th century. The castle was the bishop's palace up to the 16th century, so that's probably why it was built on the cliffs as well. So they built the church probably across then from, and had his palace was there. Obviously subsequently again later owned by Sir Walter Raleigh, it was sold to by Raleigh to Richard Boyle, the Earl of Cork here in Youghal, we'll say our Youghal buddy. And then through marriage of the Boyles, it passed on to the Cavendishes, who have it today. So if you think of it, the Cavendishes really have it since, you know, since Walter Raleigh's time, basically.
And they're there.
But we'll say, it's just a kind of a thing for us, we'll say when we were in school, in 1627, the castle was the birthplace of the first Earl, first Earl's most famous son, Robert Boyle. And Boyle's Law, the absolute pressure exerted by a given mass of gas is inversely proportional to the volume of blah, 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 blah.
That was clashed into you going to school.
It was clashed into
all of us.
But you know what?
They got it wrong, won't be hated.
And I had no interest in it until I took up diving. And then it was trashed into us again.
But of course, then you see, it was relevant to you.
It was indeed. And basically what they're saying is, if you get a container of air and then if you squeeze it halfways, well then the pressure inside is twice,
it doubles.
And that's basically what they're saying. So anything to do with us, with gas, we'll say air cylinders that we breathe from, or even the air that's in our lungs, compressed air, and it's all to do with Boyle's Law then as well.
But
he was a fair man in 1627. But I was talking to somebody, and I think it was Norman MacDonald, and Norman MacDonald said to me, he says, it wasn't really him, his sister was the genius. But because she was a girl,
She got no recognition.
She got no recognition. So I'd never followed up on it, but I was get back onto Norman. If you're listening, Norman, you'll have to expand on that one anyway.
He spent a bit of time, I think, out in Kilnatora Castle, I think.
I'm not sure.
I think he did. I think his name is associated with Kilnatora Castle as well, whether he used it as a hunting lodge or whatever the case may be. As you know, Kilnatora Castle is only a small...
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Did he use it as a hunting lodge? But he's associated with that as well. It's amazing.
But he was famous, all the astronomers and all this kind of good stuff as well, all the secret guys over in England. He was part of these
he
guys.
He was part, yeah, yeah, yeah. He was part of it, yeah, you could say, of a scientific... group
movement,
or, yeah,
yeah,
movement, I suppose, yeah, yeah.
But I must find out about that actually, yeah, more, because he, yeah, said about the sister, was, would have been more famous,
quite plausible, you know.
But, like, we're talking about the castle, no, the castle is just amazing, you know. Once you cross over the bridge, and you know, you really have to see the castle,
well, to see it in pause, and once you cross, it's just to look at it,
yeah,
alone.
But again, you have, yeah, to cross over the bridge. As I said, where the garages walk backwards,
yes,
to it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's
amazing. Absolutely fabulous, isn't
and
it?
If you take, we'd say, even the Ballyduff Road a bit, we went down there last year now as well, and we went into the field, to the river, back to the river,
yeah,
and we were just straight across from it as well. Absolutely,
yeah,
fantastic now,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah,
so definitely,
yeah,
worked. Lismore is beautiful, really, really.
A beautiful place, actually, beautiful place.
We'll say even the, today now, we'll say you can visit the gardens as well, Noel, and it's, again, well worth it. It was there last year again, bought the vegetables, all that kind of good stuff as well. The gardens that we see today was designed by Joseph Paxton, and he was the visionary who designed Crystal Palace in England, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
that was for,
yeah,
the show.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that. The bridge, we were talking about the bridge, Lismore Bridge, that we travel over today, still trucks, everything like that, built in 1775, Noel.
1775, yeah.
Built and paid for by the Duke himself.
Yes.
So at a certain time, Hollywood came to Lismore as well, when Charles Cavendish married Adele Estelle.
Oh, that's right, yeah, yeah,
in 1932.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
there was a union there, yeah, yeah.
I suppose,
yeah,
anybody,
yeah,
under 30 will know who we're talking about, but we all know Fred Astaire.
We all know Fred Astaire, yeah, exactly,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And I think Adele and Fred started off dancing together, you know, in Hollywood, we'll say in films and all that, it was the,
yeah,
two of them together,
yeah,
were all doing the dancing. But Fred...
He was a guest, he was a regular guest there.
Oh, he was there the whole time, and
yeah, yeah,
packing everything up in the wall about,
yeah,
him as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And loved to go down and talk to the locals and,
I
know,
believe
go to the,
so,
pub,
yeah,
and have,
yeah,
a drink and all,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So, one thing I noticed, and I just stuck it in here as well, was the amount of ice houses. Ice houses were for storing fish.
Oh, yes.
So it must have been, there's a load of them around the place, Noel. So,
yes,
there must have been huge amounts of fish being taken in.
Of course.
You know, and there was eels as well as salmon.
And of course, as well as that, you see, the ice was plentiful, I suppose, in the wintertime off the bogs and everything else like that.
It was, but they used,
yeah,
to take, but they still used to bring from Scandinavian countries, they used to bring ice down.
Yeah.
You know, the way it was actually brought down as well, they used to fill up the boats full of ice up there.
Well, perfect,
well,
I suppose, if anybody wants to see what an ice house, perfect example of an ice house is out in the grounds of the now defunct Hilltop Hotel.
Oh yeah, that's right, you're dead right, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a nice,
yeah,
house.
That was a nice house.
That was a nice,
right,
house. And apparently the ice was taken off the bog there,
yeah,
and just packed in. And the insulation, of course, is all brick and a brick roof and all. The insulation was so good that in the middle of summer the ice would still be there.
There, jeez.
So there you are. So you're talking about refrigeration back in the Middle Ages.
Yeah, it's all there.
Yeah, it's all there.
But so we're after kind of doing a bit of Lismore there and,
yeah,
the castle.
Mm.
Definitely go to the castle. And,
yeah,
we'd say the boardwalk as well is well worth it. Things,
yes,
down the river, the St. Declan's Way is well worth it. But another place is amazing is Ballysagard Towers. We'll say a little kind of a parkland through the forest, I suppose. And basically, if you go over the bridge and take the very first turn to your left-hand side, you're heading for Ballyduff for Moy.
Right.
But it's well signposted. If you have never been in Ballysagard Moor Towers, these are imposing Gothic style follies, basically, and they're about 2.5 kilometres, so you won't walk from Lismore, but there's plenty of car space out there as well. Along as you drive along there's plenty of car spaces there as well. They stand in a pleasant woodland setting with forest walks and picnic areas in their fairy tale setting, and it is a fairy tale setting if you look,
yeah,
at it,
yeah.
But the truth behind the scenes, Noel, the towers are set in a very sad period of history, and a real sad piece of history in the world. You know, I hate to end up in a bad, sad place, but this,
yeah,
is where we have to talk about the towers as our last place,
yeah,
port of call here on this journey. So really, at the turn of the century, the 18th century and the 19th century, John Kiley Sr. bought 8,500 acres of Ballysagard Moor and built a new house. When he died in 1808, the best part of the estate, including Strangcowley, was inherited by his elder son, John Kiley, who built Strangcowley Castle. We spoke about John Kiley. And beautiful how the castle is absolutely amazing. John Kiley's younger brother, Arthur Kiley, inherited Ballysaggart Moor, and with and when he returned from the Napoleonic Wars in 1817, he built a new house at Ballysaggart, so it was Ballysaggart Moor House.
Yes.
However, he decided in the 1830s that this house was not grand enough for his needs and his social aspirations. One of these guys now.
He had ideas above his station, basically, hadn't he?
And he'd help. He had a wife.
And she was probably she wore the trousers.
What it was said that his plans were driven largely by his wife Elizabeth. Who demanded a residence as grand as her brother-in-law's home in Strangcowley Castle. So that the brother-in-law was in Strangcowley Castle. They were living in Ballysaggart Moor House. They wanted. She wanted. I want to be Strangcowley. Now, I heard before, and I'm not sure if this is correct, two boys were brothers. But I heard that the two girls were sisters.
Oh, yeah.
I think they were, I suppose Pat Geary, if he's listening and all that, could tell us more about this. But I thought that the two girls were sisters. So it was two brothers married to two sisters. And that was things. So family kind of gets in the way sometimes because what it said was, it is said that the two wives traded insults and so forced the brothers into a bitter rivalry as well. The two families kind of into a bitter rivalry. It was just pure jealousy, basically. And that was it. After kind of this, Arthur changed his surname to Kiley Usher in 1843. So the Ushers were a long established family in the area, and the Kiley brothers were related to them through their mother. And I think it was the Musgraves. So the Musgraves in the area as well, landowners, but they were Musgrave Ushers as well. But the very first one going up the river, whatever house was it again, I can't think of it, was the Nevilles, and they were Neville Usher. So he was Neville, and he was an usher in the King's Court, and he changed his name to Usher. And this is where the whole Usher, and they all kind of taken on the name.
That's where the name came from.
You had to be part of the family. But what it says here, Noel, was in 1834, the tower and lodges were constructed on the main avenue leading to the family's residence at Ballysaggart Moor House. But in the 1840s, so they decided that this house was not grand enough for them, so they started to actually clear the estate of rent-paying tenants and evicted between 700 and 800 people from the tenants from between 1841 and 1851. And what was happening in 1841 to 1851?
Of course, the famine.
The Great Famine. You know, so this did not go down well with anybody.
Of course, you see.
And what it said was, during the famine, even the population of, we'll say, County Waterford alone fell by 50%. The few remaining tenants on the estate were starving and unable to pay the rents. And what they said was, unlike many of their neighbouring landlords, Arthur Kiley Usher refused to suspend or reduce the rents. Instead, he used the non-payment to justify evicting tenants and levelling their homes. And several hundred families were evicted in 1847, making it one of the largest clearances during the whole of the famine in the whole of Ireland. So this guy was for one house.
He was a bad egg, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And what it says was,
he was a landlord from hell.
But they all knew about him. You know the way, this is from the whole area. He was giving every landlord a bad name now at this stage. And what it says was, there was a report in the Cork Examiner on Ballysaggart Moor House, because obviously it hit the papers and everything in 1847. Describes famished women and crying children cowering in the ruins of their burnt cottages after selling all they had to buy food. They said even the bedclothes and everything like that. They sold everything to buy food. And I heard even another thing which was absolutely horrible, was that his guys, that, you know, his hard men that were going But initially they started doing was offering people £5, because £5 would get you onto a ship to America, you know, new life and all that. And it would get you on. They'd offer you five things, but you had to take down the roof of your house. The main thing was to take down the roof of the house. They'll give you the £5. Once the roof is down, they'll give you the £5 and you can head off to America then at that stage. A lot of the tenants took the roof down. There was no £5. You know the way, they wouldn't pay up then at that stage.
Yeah.
And that's why they were sitting there. They had no money to leave, no money to stay, nothing. And as I said, go back to Strangcowley Castle, the brother. In contrast, Arthur's brother John was a benevolent landlord at Strangkelly Castle and killed his own cows and spending £1,000 back then in just 9 months to feed starving people.
And that was a lot of money then.
A lot of money now.
Yeah.
John was also on the board of guardians of the workhouses where a lot of his brother's tenants ended up. So he was Lismore and Dungarvan.
Yes.
He was on the board of guardians there at the workhouse. And Jesus.
Yeah, there were some good landlords like in the time.
Oh, listen.
And some pathetic landlords at the time.
What they said was even Keynes went to him. The Keane families went to him.
Mm.
The Cavendishes, the Duke of Devonshire, pleaded with him. Musgraves went to him. Everybody went to him. And no, he wasn't having it. And even there was a local story. As I said, the landlords tried to intervene, but even a local priest, Father Fogarty was from Ballyduff, so just up the road really from him, went to and plead for his tenants, but he was told ushers will not be dictated to by priests. So that was his answer to that. Now you know the ending of these things. It's never happy for these people.
Never.
And you know, but what it says was Arthur Coyley Usher remained deeply unpopular even after the famine as well. And an attempt was made to shoot him as he entered the estates through the gates.
I'm not surprised.
There was a court case and the boys, there were seven of them sent over to Tasmania, I think it was, at the time as well. Probably got better fed over there at the time as well. But the funny thing is, it's like opening a shop, Noel, you know the way, and then chasing all the customers out. What happens? Yeah. You've no money. What happened to him? Without his tenants that he kicked off the estates to pay rents and provide an income, his fortunes ran out.
Yeah.
And they went bankrupt, basically.
Yeah.
So they got the towers and the gateways built, but nothing else then at that stage.
Yeah.
He actually went fully bankrupt because he was the encumbered estate court. Put Ballysagard Moor up for sale, they said, in 1854, but nobody was interested in buying it.
Go ahead.
For a simple reason of the history.
It had a bad day.
It had a really...
Well, I'd say, when he died, there wasn't a dry eye in the house.
It was a small funeral.
His wife Elizabeth was there. But that was just it, like, there were so many bad landlords. But then again, there were so many good landlords as well that really helped.
Everybody else around the area were pleading with them to stop. That's what, like, and they said it everywhere. Everywhere I've read it was everyone else was. And the likes of the, as I said, the Duke of Devonshire, the Musgraves, the Keynes, all big landlords. And they were doing everything to feed. They were dropping rents. They were free rents even at that stage as well, because there was nothing happening with them. Like, so there's no point in trying to, you know, suck blood out of a stone. But what it said was the house then was 1854, and then in 1861, obviously they had to drop the price so much down. There was a guy bought the place as well, and they said in 1861 the lands were sold. And he died. Arthur Usher Coyley died in 1862, a year later than at that stage. So he didn't last too long.
Didn't last too long after that.
They said because Ballysagard Moor House was still there, it said during the Irish Civil War. You know, I was just saying about the Keane's house, I was surprised, but I'm not surprised with this one. They said during the Irish Civil War, Ballysagard Moor House was attacked by the anti-treaty IRA and destroyed by fire in 1922.
Yeah, of course, it's all the people with long memories.
Oh, you can
they
be
have
sure.
Long, long memories. They have long
he
memories.
Would have been on the list for a long time as well.
Yeah.
So now we are after getting from all the way from Yall, all the way up to Lismore.
And
on the Blackwater.
As we said earlier there, like just we made reference to there a little bit earlier, just to elaborate on it. Yall at the time, as I said, was the gateway. Think of the trade that passed through Yall, you know, feeding all the little keys up along and the whole lot. It must have been an amazing sight as we stand here with St. South Abbey and look out over the bay. And can we imagine all the 3 and 4 master schooners out there?
Unbelievable. And it must have been a huge sight because, like, as I said, the amount, what were we saying, 200 or 300 ships registered in Yall, 200 and something registered in Yall alone.
Yes.
Back in the 1700s as well, like Noel, it was just amazing. And like one thing that we'd say Frank Mills was telling me as well was, you know, you had even up the Bride, you had like the different piers, Moor Hill, Janeville, Tallow Piers, and all that. But as he said, and I saw it myself when myself and we'd say Morris was up there, there's all kind of dugouts in the bank. And Frank was saying what it was because obviously the woods were all, the whole place was kind of wooded area.
Yes, yes.
So if they want to kind of clear wood, you know, 1,000 acres or something like that, they wouldn't kind of transport all the wood then down to Janeville, Moorhill,
things
like that. What they do is they dig a kind of an area out of the bank,
yes,
and you'll bring your boat in, and then they'll keep feeding then from there, and then they'll move up a mile up to the river and do it again, you know the way. So
absolutely,
it was just easier to do it that way than it was, the way to things. So absolutely brilliant, you know the way. But the rivers, again, if you can, I'm saying to everybody who has a boat, kind of a small Irish boat, go up as far as, you would say, if you're going up the river, the Blackwater, go up the Bright, and just up the Bright then is Camfer Bridge.
Yes.
And if you can get under Camfer Bridge, go under Camfer Bridge then.
Yes.
Bridge. But if your boat can't.
There's a whole new world over there, up there.
Oh,
a whole new world.
It's huge, the Bright. I thought it was a little kind of, you know, when you look at the tallow, it looks
like. The conception of it is, it's a tallow down to Camfer Bridge.
Camfer Bridge.
But it's not.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, it's not. It's not anything like it.
It's wide, and there's like wide pieces. Like, if you know, we were travelling there from Capoquin to Lismore, it's a hell of a, the Bright is twice as width of the Blackwater, even at that point as well, anyway. So, geez, no, it's absolutely fantastic. So, it's another place for me now to go back up again, because I was used to the Blackwater, but not so much. I was used to it up to Camfer Bridge, but never up where we went now with Morris as well, anyway. So brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
So we're back in your hall, Mike, and we're bidding farewell to the Kathleen and May as she strikes out over to Biddeford and Wales now for another load of coal.
We're going to bring back coal.
But she'll be back to us again.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mike, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And as I say, still the gaze is still no one to grow, that one small head could carry all it knew. Mike, you're taking a little bit of a sabbatical from us now, aren't you?
Just
for the summer.
Yeah, we just take a little, we do a bit of fishing Fridays, we call it.
Fishing Friday, yeah.
So I take every Friday off and
go fishing.
But what I'll do is we'll get back into the history again for the winter time as well, anyway.
Okay.
It's too hot for history.
It is. It's too hot. On that merry note, Mike, we'll leave it. And indeed, again, can I thank you most sincerely for the wonderful series? Because so many people have said to me, strangers, when is Mike on again? So now, well, Mike will be back with us, as I said.
I'll tell you a very quick one, so, because my brother was back from, now I won't mention him because he'd be very, very embarrassed about this, but he was back from a certain sunny climb place called Dubai.
Yes.
And as I said, I won't mention his name, but he says, when he was home, it was the first show was on, and he says, yeah, I heard your show. He says, you rabbit on a bit, don't you? Like that. Now, if you know my brother or this brother, that's a very high praise indeed. That's all I say. And as I said, out of pure embarrassment, I won't mention his name, but I would just like to say hello to his long-suffering wife, Anne, and her lovely mother, Maura Connolly, there out in Dicer Grove.
Yes.
So good morning to you all.
Well, indeed, to the Connolly family, I can tell you, Mike didn't kiss the Blarney Stone, he made love to it. Mike, again, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks very much. All the best, Steve.